Good morning. You've tuned in to North Idaho News of the Week from Panhandle Community Radio. This is 88.5 KRFY. I'm Jack Peterson, and with me is Will Love. Good morning, Will.
Good morning. How are you doing?
And we're joined this morning by Max Oswald from the Bonner County Daily Bee.
Hey, Jack, real quick, I've got some breaking news.
Okay.
Today is my 22nd wedding anniversary with Debbie Love.
So, wow.
Anyway, breaking news right there.
Hey, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
Well,
it was a beautiful day in Sandpoint, like today, and we got married 22 years ago. So,
where'd you get married?
At the Heartwood Center.
Oh, nice.
Yep.
Cool. Yep.
It was a different building then.
But, yep. Well, congratulations to you and Debbie.
Thank you.
We're here also with Max Oswald from the Daily Bee.
Thanks for having me, Jack.
Good morning. I think I have you on the right microphone there. Maybe. Might be this one. Try it again.
Let's see.
Yep.
That good?
There it is.
Thanks for having me, Jack.
Hey, thanks for coming. We're going to get right into the news, and I think actually I'm just going to start with an update on the biggest fire in our area by far, which is the Ridge Creek Fire down in the north, kind of off the north tip of Hayden Lake, where we will be probably seeing some smoke coming our way from that fire before too long. I actually got on the phone with somebody this morning to ask what the current status is and recorded that conversation for airplay. So we'll play that right now and then be back with news headlines from around our area in just a moment.
Hello, this is Clark with Ridge Creek Fire Information.
Hi, Clark. My name is Jack Peterson. I'm calling from KRFY in Sandpoint, Idaho. Can I record this conversation?
Sure.
Okay, thanks. I'm calling about the Ridge Creek Fire. What can you tell us about the current status of that fire?
Well, current status, we were able to get a helicopter flight in yesterday that allowed us to map the perimeter. So we're at about 2,400 acres, but we have had a lot of activity on the fire line, so we're starting to put black on the map. We're calling it at 5% contained, but that doesn't really capture how much work has gone on both the south, east, west, and north flanks. So lots of work to build off the road system to strengthen containment lines, and of course, they're out there doing that same thing today. And as you know, last 3 or 4 days we have had fairly moderate weather. Fire behavior has been sort of creeping on the ground, actually doing the job for us in terms of removing what we call fuels, burning material on the ground. The weather's going to change over the next week or two in particular, so we're going to see a hotter, drier, warming trend that's going to translate into increased fire activity. From the staffing side, we're at over 300 people. So over the last couple of days and looking into the next couple of days, we've been successful in capturing additional resources for the fire. So that's going to be a huge help.
So does that mean that the fire is going to continue to grow, or you think is it... what is your forecast now that we know that the weather's going to get hot? What do you think is going to happen with the fire?
Well, as that weather gets hotter, drier, and you look into the coming week, I think we've got forecast for the 90s. So
yep.
Particularly on those south-facing slopes, we're going to see increased fire activity. And that will translate into, you know, additional acreage. But the good news is that we don't have in the forecast any extreme wind events. And that's one of the things that really concerns us in terms of increased fire growth.
Yeah.
So we should see increased fire activity because of the weather. So folks are going to be able to see smoke, but we've got a lot of resources on the ground. We have aircraft at our availability, and we'll just continue to work hard.
And then lastly, just the evacuation status, who needs to be getting ready to evacuate, and who's been evacuated already, if anyone?
There's been no evacuations to this point. We have two well-defined areas, one in the vicinity of Hayden Lake and the other in the vicinity of the Bunco Road area. Those maps are online. Those folks are in ready status, so that first level of evacuation preparedness. And what that means is residents should have heightened awareness, should begin to make those initial preparations, so know where their meds are, where their important documents are, begin to formulate a plan should we have to go to the next stage, which would be set. So two areas in ready status where we just want folks to begin to think about what they would need to do if they were called upon to evacuate in the future.
Okay. And this looks like to me, from Sandpoint, this is about the largest fire in our vicinity by a good measure. Is that your reading of the situation as well?
There's another substantial fire, and boy, you asked me the wrong question because I don't have the map in front of me. I'm actually sitting in the mess tent eating breakfast.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
So I wish I could answer that. The best thing to do is to go on InfuWeb.
Yeah.
And pull up, you know, the Idaho Panhandle, and you'll get an immediate picture of the regional fire.
Yeah. I've got that up in front of me too, and it looks like at 2,400 acres, at least as posted here, it looks like that's about 10 times the size of the, you know, your nearest competitor, so to speak. So
right,
yeah. So I think that's the big one right now. Oh, I'm sorry. The Consalis fire over in Washington is 475. Right. So, but that is 80% contained. Well, I guess that's it. Thank you for taking the time, Clark, and good luck down there. We're back here in the studio here at 88.5 KRFY. This is North Idaho News of the Week. Just a fire update there. I will also mention that we have the Stage 2 fire restrictions are now in effect across North Idaho. According to this from the Sandpoint Reader, the moderate to severe drought conditions coupled with persistent high temperatures have contributed to the decision to raise fire restrictions to Stage 2 across North Idaho fire districts. That's lands managed by the U.S. Forest Service, Idaho Panhandle National Forest, Bureau of Land Management, Coeur d'Alene Tribe, Idaho Department of Lands, and Fish and Wildlife Service in all the northern counties. And restrictions will remain in effect until further notice. Fire danger rating has been listed as extreme across North Idaho since July 31st and has not changed. So that means you cannot build, maintain, attend, or use a fire, campfire, or stove fire. You cannot smoke except within an enclosed vehicle or building, a designated recreational site, or while stopped in an area at least 3 feet in diameter that is barren or cleared of all flammable materials. You cannot operate a motorized vehicle off of designated roads and trails in accordance with existing travel management plans for non-commercial purposes, and that includes ATVs, UTVs, and pickups. And from 1 p.m. to 1 a.m., operating a chainsaw or other equipment powered by an internal combustion engine, blasting, welding, or other activities that generate flame or flammable material, or using an explosive is prohibited. And there you have it.
Yeah. The Spokesman Review today had a story that related, obviously, to the big national story of the wildfires in Hawaii. But they were talking about essentially the conditions here are ready for something like that. We've just been really, really lucky. And so, again, we keep talking each week. Well, knock on wood that we haven't had that really bad smoke, that really bad fire around here, but still conditions are there for something bad to happen.
Yeah. It does seem like we've been lucky, I would say. I mean, at least I haven't seen really bad smoke yet, but I was gone for a little while. I don't know. Hey, let's get to the news. Right off the top, I will just mention that the two-way rail traffic has opened on the Burlington Northern Santa Fe's line over Lake Pend Oreille bridges approximately a year ahead of schedule. They announced on August 7th that they have officially opened two-way traffic on the new and refurbished train crossings over Lake Pendere. The inaugural trip over the Sandpoint Junction connector marked the last step of the project, according to a news release from Burlington Northern Santa Fe, and signified the final configuration that would allow both lines to now carry freight simultaneously. The second rail bridge, which was controversial among many who opposed it due to environmental and safety concerns related to increased coal and oil shipments, runs parallel to the existing bridge, and they are separated by approximately 50 feet. It is now open for business.
Yeah, pretty incredible to think about when just a few years ago you were looking out there watching them start to construct that and thinking, wow, this is going to take forever. But yeah, now all of a sudden it's ready. And Max, I don't know if you've learned about Sandpoint and the trains and how that can be, depending on where you live, that can be a big issue here. And so ultimately getting double tracks around is, I guess, going to be beneficial for other flows of traffic.
Yeah. Indeed. The Idaho Capital Sun from August 10th has this to say, not related to trains at all. How about this? Idaho Supreme Court rules against AG Raul Labrador's ballot titles in open primary case. We actually, when we were discussing yesterday what we're going to talk about today, we were going to say that on Monday, oral arguments had taken place on Monday, and then really, to my mind, very quickly, the justices ordered the Attorney General's office to rewrite ballot titles for the election initiative by 4 p.m. today. That's the deadline set by the justices. This comes to us from the Idaho Capital Sun, by the way. The Idaho Supreme Court on Thursday threw out ballot titles written by Idaho Attorney General Raul Labrador's office concerning a new ballot initiative relating to Idaho's primary elections, and ordered Labrador to deliver new ballot titles to the court by Friday afternoon. Thursday's opinion arrived quickly after Monday's oral arguments in the case of Idahoans for Open Primaries versus Labrador. In the opinion, Idaho Supreme Court justices agreed with several of the arguments made by Idahoans for Open Primaries and Reclaim Idaho. For example, In the short ballot title, Labrador's office used the term non-party blanket primary to describe aspects of the ballot initiative. Quote, "We conclude that, although non-party blanket primary is not commonly used to describe the measure to the extent some individuals are familiar with the term, it is likely to cause prejudice against the initiative," Idaho Supreme Justice Colleen Dizon wrote in the 31-page unanimous opinion. The short title risks confusing voters about the constitutionality of the proposed primary system. The quote, she continues, "In sum, we hold that the short title fails to substantially comply with Section 34-1809D and E in several respects. Its use of the term non-party blanket primary fails to utilize language by which the measure is commonly referred to, is not distinctive, and is likely to prejudice the initiative. Additionally, the statement that the initiative would, quote, subquote, require ranked choice voting for general elections is also likely to prejudice the initiative." End quote there. They also advised that the term open primary favored by supporters of the initiative was imprecise and suggested the term top four primary. It was a unanimous decision. The Idaho Supreme Court Chief Justice G. Richard Bevin and Justices Robin M. Brody, John R. Stegner, and Gregory W. Moeller concurred with the ruling, but they did decline to extend the May 1st deadline to turn in signatures for the initiative to appear on the ballot in November 2024. So they will have new titles, supposedly by 4 p.m. today, and then if those are accepted and there's no further court case, the initiative supporters have until May 1st of next year to actually get their ballot, their signatures collected in time to get it on the ballot for November 2024. That's the update on that story. In other legal news, the U.S. District Court has temporarily blocked Idaho's law requiring students to use bathrooms based on sex at birth. On Thursday, the U.S. District Court decided that it would temporarily block enforcement of an Idaho law meant to prevent transgender students from using school restrooms that correspond with their gender identity. Senate Bill 1100, which took effect July 1st, would have required public schools to maintain two separate multi-occupancy restrooms, showers, changing facilities, and overnight accommodations for students based on their sex assigned at birth. It also would have allowed students to sue the school for a minimum fine of $5,000 if they encountered a transgender student in the bathroom. But in a legal order Thursday, the U.S. District Court granted a request for a temporary restraining order against the law preventing schools from enforcing that mandate ahead of the school year. Attorneys representing an anonymous 7th grade transgender student in the Boise School District and Boise High School's Sexuality and Gender Alliance are suing State Superintendent of Education Debbie Critchfield, the Idaho State Board of Education, and the Boise School District under the claim that the law violates the Equal Protection and Due Process Clauses of the 14th Amendment and Title IX of the Education Amendments of 1972 by singling out transgender youth for discriminatory treatment. A motion hearing for the lawsuit is now scheduled for 9 a.m. September 13th at the U.S. District Court in Boise.
What the U.S. District Judge said is ultimately this is a temporary restraining order. And he said, this just puts a pause on Senate Bill 1100. It does not find it unconstitutional. It does not find it constitutional. This is not a full adjudication of any arguments on the merits. And that was what the U.S. District Court Judge said. So this is just a temporary restraining order. We'll see later on what the decision is. And based on some reading, it sounds like the decisions at the district court have been kind of varying throughout the country on whether to on whether these laws are constitutional or not.
Also in education news, there's continues to be a lot going on at the West Bonner County School District. Most recently, the West Bonner County School District on Monday had announced, or Brandon Durst had announced at a town hall on Monday, that they would be closing Priest River Junior High during repairs to an aging boiler, which would have required the students of the 7th and 8th graders there to move into Priest River High School for the duration of those repairs, I guess, and I don't know how long that would have been. But the meeting on Wednesday of the West Bonner County School Board dismissed those plans, and they will, it looks like going into the new school year, Priest River Junior High will remain open. Not sure. It doesn't sound like they came to a decision of what they're going to do about the necessary repairs.
Well, I think ultimately, and maybe Max, you can speak to this a little bit since you've covered it, but essentially this came pretty quickly, option that they were thinking about of closing the district or this middle school down and then opening or bringing temporary classrooms at the high school. And so, ultimately, I think, something needs to be done with the school. It is an old school, and, a boiler is important in North Idaho, but ultimately they're looking at, just what are the plans going to be? And so, Max, this is kind of another issue that the West Bonner County School District's been having.
Yeah, I was listening to public comment the other night, and I think a lot of parents were really concerned that, their child, maybe 9, 10 years old, would be in the same classroom as an 18-year-old. You heard a lot of that at the meeting. I've been over there a lot, and just a lot of public comment, and, it's good to see people standing up for what they believe in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they certainly have been doing that. It's been awfully active over in West Bonner County.
Well, and real quick, one other thing on West Bonner County is that two former employees have filed lawsuits against West Bonner County. And so that's Steffi Pavey and Shauna McDonald filed a lawsuit against the West Bonner County School District for violating the Fair Labor Standards Act. And Pavey is the district's former business manager, and McDonald worked in payroll. And so anyway, that's just another issue that's going on. And do you know any more on that story?
I don't know any more, but I was over at Priest River Timber Days talking to Steffi Pavey. She's still going to be the cross-country coach as of right now, but that's all I know.
All right.
In other education news over here in East Bonner County School District, Dr. Becky
Meyer. Lake Pondere School District.
Oh, yeah. Big. Lake Pondere School District. Yes, Dr. Becky Meyer, the superintendent on this side of the county, has won Idaho Superintendent of the Year. Let me pull that story up. I don't have it right in front of me. There we go. Yeah. A little over a year into her role as Lake Pondere School District Superintendent, Dr. Becky Meyer has been named Superintendent of the Year by the Idaho Association of School Administrators. And thanks to the Bonner County Daily Bee for that headline.
Yeah, congratulations to Dr. Meyer.
Yeah. It looks like a lot of great folks were nominated, said Ron Sauer, Superintendent of Homedale School District, in announcing Meyer's selection. But Dr. Meyer has been a leader of Idaho education for many years on a variety of levels. Her application was amazing. She is a great choice by the administration and represents us well. This award is well deserved. Well, there you have it.
Yeah.
In current news here in Sandpoint, there are the three plans on display for the waterfront improvement. What is it? The waterfront improvement plan. I'm sorry, I don't have my email open right in front of me right now. Downtown waterfront redesign. You can find those plans online, and they were on display last weekend at the farmers market on Saturday, and they will be on display this weekend at the farmers market on Saturday. And staff from the city will be on hand to explain what's going on and answer questions. And then on the 15th of August, there will be some sort of final decision on which plan will be pursued, although they can, once they determine a plan, that the plan can then be also modified, including possibly incorporating elements from the other two existing plans when they decide to move forward.
Yeah, if you can't make it to the meeting or down to the farmer's market, you can also find this information on sandpointidaho.gov under news and announcements. And just looking at kind of the photos, I mean, they're pretty, you know, they would, some of them would dramatically change downtown.
Indeed. Yeah, I saw them myself. I was a little surprised at how dramatic some of the proposed changes are. We'll see what comes of it, I guess.
Yeah.
In county news, the county commission continues to dispute, this time over Robert's Rules of Order, which is the headline from the Daily Bee just says the dispute continues following a dispute at last week's Bonner County Commissioners meeting regarding the proper use of Robert's Rules of Order. Commissioner Asia Williams offered clarifications on her interpretation of its use at Tuesday's meeting. On August 1st, Williams had asked Commissioner Luke Ahmet a question about the Bonner County Fairgrounds. Ahmet declined to answer, contending a motion had to be on the floor in order for commissioners to engage in back and forth discussion per Robert's Rules of Order. However, Williams said this week that her review indicates that this is not the case. You can have a discussion without a motion, she said. There is no requirement to motion to have a discussion. Williams claimed the other two commissioners are attempting to use the motion argument to deny her the right to speak. Because of this, she said she plans to bring those items back next week for discussion once again. It will be the third time these four topics find themselves on the agenda. Deliberation is not filibuster, she said. We're not using Robert's Rules of Order for the sake of the meeting. We're using Robert's Rules of Order as an attempt to control a commissioner's ability to speak in a meeting, which is not even in line with what Robert's Rules of Order is made for. That's a quote from Commissioner Asia Williams. And she intends to seek an end to using the procedures as she feels they are unbeneficial to the commissioner's meetings. I don't know. That's what's going on at the Bonner County Committee or Board of Commissioners.
Yeah, and my guess is probably next week we'll be talking kind of about the same thing.
Yep. It's interesting that, I mean, Robert's Rules of Order, of course, is kind of designed to clarify the way that, you know, meetings are run. It's these, you know, rules are set down in a book so that there is no dispute about how they can be used. And then, and now there's a dispute over how those rules are in use. So it is, yes, contention upon contention at the Bonner County Commissioners meeting. I think that covers all of our, I guess I would say, hard news that we really wanted to touch on. And now we have a few minutes left. Thank goodness Max is here. And gentlemen, put on your headphones. Here we go. It is time for... Wait, where is that? Oh, man. It is time for some sports. Yes. I had...
Oh, there we go. All right. Sweet.
There it is.
Nice.
Yeah. Let's talk about what's coming up in sports locally here on the what's coming up this fall in local and regional and it, whatever else sports.
I think before we go into a sort of fall sports preview, we want to touch on some big things that happened here over the summer.
Okay. Yeah.
And the first ever travel softball team based in Sandpoint called the North was formed this summer.
Yeah.
And they're actually having tryouts tomorrow for an 18U team, 16U team, 14U team, 12U. So, and they've been winning games this summer. They have players from Priest River, Bonner's Ferry, Thompson Falls, and here in Sandpoint. It's been fun to kind of see that develop. And softball is definitely growing here in Bonner and Boundary County.
Where do they play their games?
They play in tournaments all over Washington, North Idaho, have some home games here at the middle school. I know their most recent tournament was in Yakima.
Okay.
So
wow.
They're going all over the place.
That's a pretty big deal. Mm-hmm. Is this softball, this is co-ed or girls softball?
Girls softball, okay. Yep.
Yeah.
And Logan Conroe, the assistant coach for Sandpoint High School softball, has taken that on. And Cody Montgomery, Bethany Danish, involved with the Little League here at Sandpoint. They'll be manning the 12U team. Coach John Wilson, who has a daughter here in Sandpoint, also doing the 14U team. Big community effort.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and ultimately, Jack, I mean, and Max can talk to this a little bit, is that, you know, if you want to be successful with your high school teams, you need to have essentially these kind of club teams or opportunities for them. And so, you know, for a long time, there was Strikers, you know, and there still is Strikers. And then there was a pretty active club volleyball. But now we're starting to see sports like basketball and softball really dive into that and get kids traveling to a lot of places and playing a lot of that sport. And, you know, as a basketball coach that just recently won a state title, I can tell you how important that is to kind of have that base there when the kids come to the high school, because other communities are doing the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I know facilities and resources are sometimes an issue, and I'll be doing a story here soon, but you know, the travel softball team looking for facilities plan during the fall and winter and spring, and that's another challenge around this area.
Yeah, I thought, speaking of news, the Field of Dreams with their kind of starting construction and stuff like that, that's going to be something that will definitely help in this community as far as adding some more soccer fields and probably softball and baseball fields as well.
Yeah, that's north of Ponderay,
yep.
I think, on, yeah.
Yeah, the city property of Ponderay is funding that.
Yep. On the club note, I know I was a swimmer in high school, and I don't know how long ago I graduated high school, early 2000s, and at that time even it was if the only competitive high schools were from towns that had a swim club as well, you know, the youth swim club, and is that pretty much the case in all sports that you see?
Yeah. And we got to mention the Sandpoint Sharks too, and the great job that they've done, because one of the most successful programs at the high school has been the swim team over the years, especially on the girls side. They've been really, really strong, winning some state titles and some other state trophies.
Yeah.
What about what about fall sports? What are we looking at?
Yeah, so I'm currently doing a lot of interviews, going to a lot of practices. I know Sandpoint football will be over there for media day today. Their first game's on the 25th versus Post Falls, a team that historically Sandpoint's lost to, but last year we beat by 4 touchdowns, and I know they're really looking forward to having that first home game in the season. Mm-hmm. In regards to golf, I know women's golf will be looking for a state title. They finished third last year. I was over at the Idaho Club talking with them yesterday. And I know the boys team, lots of sophomores on their team, and they'll be looking to make a state run as well.
Yeah, Coach DePreez is doing a great job, and he's every time guy. I see him, he's got a big smile on his face.
Yeah, over there at practice, he's just very hands-on, and he really knows what he's talking about, that's for sure. I was just over in Clark Fork as well at the they have a new head football coach this year, and he's a 2009 alumni, and he works as a railroad technician out there in Clark Fork. But yeah, they're a really fun team. That 8-man football stuff, that gets me kind of excited too. And
yeah, Jack, if you ever have a chance, mm-hmm. there's an 8-man football game going on, you should go check it out, because it is like it's essentially like basketball almost. I mean, it is nonstop. They are all over the, you know, because you're taking 6 people off the field, and they, you know, the dimensions change just a little bit, and you go from community, these small town to small town, and the fields, you know, like sometimes they kind of have what amounts to a hill in the middle of it and stuff like that.
Right,
but
yeah.
It's really, really fun to watch.
What positions do they remove for 8-man? Do you know? I mean,
that's a great question. Never heard of 8-man until I moved out here. So from Pennsylvania, we always had 11-man.
Yeah, a couple of linemen.
I'm guessing.
Yeah, a couple of linemen, and then some of the linemen are actually eligible.
Oh,
you know, so it's I mean, I'm not going to get too much into the rules because I don't want to sound dumb to 8-man aficionados. But there's actually in Montana and starting in Idaho, they're starting to play 6-man football as well because these schools are so small.
Right,
anyway, so that would be something to see sometime.
Yeah. That reminds me of like elementary school, I think, 6-man football.
Yeah. I got a quick question for you. What do you know about sports in the West Bonner County School District?
Yeah, so they're still up in the air. I did receive an email about 2 weeks ago from the outgoing athletic director, Chris Taylor. And he said that they were planning on having sports seasons, and they had the green light to announce that and everything. But then I've also been hearing conflicting statements on whether there's going to be a football team, whether there's not. You know, same for all the other sports. So all those things kind of really up for debate still on whether, you know, it's going to happen. Not sure how the funding is going to be appropriated yet either. Been heard of some pay-to-play stuff. Maybe half of it's going to be funded. Maybe it's not. I hope it gets figured out soon.
Well, they've got games soon, right?
So the first football game I know is supposed to be September 1st. And I know the cross-country team will start going to invitationals, or should be, within the next week or two. I'm hoping that gets figured out within a week, because I'm still kind of up in the air on it all. Although I've seen boys soccer, girls soccer going forward and starting to do things. I think it's going to happen, but all speculation.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things that I heard early on was the idea that they probably were going to do fall sports. It was more kind of the winter and spring sports that were kind of up in the air.
That sounds right. I hope so. And actually, a Priest River defensive lineman, Landon Reynolds, was just named a top 10 player to look out for in the state of Idaho. And I know there's a lot of people really hoping that he would be able to compete in a varsity team this fall.
Yeah. I've got another question for you. This isn't necessarily high school sports, and it's not necessarily Sandpoint, but it does impact kind of our region. And so last week, it was pretty crazy following on Twitter, but basically the Pac-12 is now the Pac-4. And I know that a lot of people in Sandpoint will go down and to Pullman and watch the Cougars play, say, like USC or UCLA and football and basketball and stuff like that. And kind of after this year, that's going to be no more. So, I mean, what's kind of what's been of interest to you as you've been watching this conference? It's 100 years old. All of a sudden, kind of on the brink of dissolving.
Yeah, I think it really shakes things up in the Big Ten. And now with 18 teams in the Big Ten, I feel like they need to rename the conference.
Yeah.
But you know, I think it was entirely a football decision, if I would give my own opinion. And it's going to be interesting seeing, you know, baseball, softball, lacrosse, even sports like cross country, you know, traveling from Oregon to, you know, Penn State for a couple games and back. I mean, I remember when I did sports in college, we'd go from like Pennsylvania to Vermont and back, and I was drained. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't imagine what these athletes are going to have to face.
Well, that's interesting. This is news to me, actually. Believe it or not, I haven't been following sports Twitter
lately. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. It's a crazy place, Jack.
I remember when the Big Ten had 11 teams, and they incorporated the 11 kind of into the Big Ten logo.
Right?
Yeah, and that was. That was kind of
well. We're looking at the Big Ten has 18, the Big 12 has 14, and the Pac 12 has 4. So,
and I know USC and UCLA are in talks with the ACC, or just kind of
Stanford and Cal.
Oh, Stanford and Cal, ones.
Okay.
So yeah, essentially, you know, I think the bigger picture here is that again, this conference, the Pac 10 or Pac 8, some people remember Pac 12 now. Has essentially like is dissolving in front of our eyes, and so the landscape of college sports, which has changed drastically over the years, is changing even more. And I think the West Coast is kind of going to be missing out, except unless you're a Washington, Oregon, USC, or UCLA fan on an opportunity to kind of see January 1st, or they do the bowl games now differently, but in those big games like the Rose Bowl and the Sugar Bowl and stuff that.
Rose Bowl's on New Year's Day.
All right.
Well, that's going to be interesting. I mean, is the conference just going to be like basically gone? I would imagine if it's only got four teams.
A couple things that they're looking at is either adding some teams. Potentially like a Boise State might become a Pac. Whatever team, or kind of depending on what happens with Stanford and Cal, you would see like Washington State and Oregon State maybe join the Mountain West. So there's still several options on the board, but ultimately, college football is becoming kind of a professional sport for these bigger schools. And I remember when I was working as a reporter covering Idaho, University of Idaho football, talking to the AD there. And, you know, essentially that's what he was kind of forecasting for the future, is that there's going to be kind of this kind of super group, and then there's going to be the rest.
Mm-hmm.
So you see all these kind of smaller schools like Washington State, Oregon State, like trying to, you know, get into that bigger group because it means more money.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, I think when it comes to college football, we're going to kind of see probably a super division kind of form.
Yeah. We are, as always, we are over time. Any last minute, anything else you wanted to mention?
I just want to say the Sandpoint Boys Cross Country got ranked in a preseason poll a couple days ago, and they're ranked 7th in the state. They finished 10th last year, and they're on the up and coming. And Matt and Angie Brass, or I should say Matt Brass for the men's team, no longer coaching after 17 great years, but Mike Earhart, I'll be interviewing next week. He's the new coach and looking to lead them far into state championship.
They're out there. They're out there running every morning. I go right by my house. I see them, both men's and women's, or girls and boys, I guess. Teams run right by, and that started, I think, last week or a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
There we go. I don't know. I think that's it. That's news, or that's what we've got here at KRFY. Thanks for listening to North Idaho News of the Week. And stay tuned for Otto's Eclectic Mix all day long here on 88.5 KRFY Ponderay. This is Panhandle Community Radio. With that,
thank you.
Thank you. We will go into something by Willie Nelson here on 88.5 KRFY Panhandle Community Radio.